We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the All NBA Show, part of the All City Podcast Network. I'm your host, Adam Modest. Tim Legler has the day off. He is en route to Phoenix, where he will be calling a game on ESPN tonight. So I am joined instead by the wonderful analyst, YouTube host of Hoops Tonight, Jason Timpf. Jason, thanks so much for joining me today.
Adam, it's great to meet you in person finally. Obviously, I've been an admirer of yours from afar for a while. Also, to fill in for the great Tim Legler is an honor. And what a great slate of games to talk about today. I'm super excited.
Likewise, first of all, really admire the work you do. And if you guys haven't checked it out, go over and check out Hoops Tonight. Always does these fantastic breakdowns the day after, has great late night immediate reactions, kind of like the winner's lounge that we do at DNVR, but obviously Jason covering the entire NBA. So check that out if you have not already. And you're right, man. Legs and I do the show, you know, four times a week. And most of the time you get good games. You don't always get great games. Sometimes you get duds. And the duds, it's like, all right, we're not really given the conversation. We're going to have to create it. Last night, the NBA did the work for us. Nothing but fantastic games, including our headline game, the Nuggets and the Celtics. We're going to get right into that. First, I got to tell you, we are presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Stay tuned because you'll hear more about what DraftKings has to offer throughout the show. DraftKings, the crown is yours. It was the marquee matchup. Maybe the most anticipated, maybe it's just me because I'm a Denver fan. The most anticipated game of the year. In large part because coming out of the break, both teams had some momentum. You kind of look at, okay, that's the two best teams in each conference. I think most people feel that way. So this had a buildup to it, and I thought it lived up to the hype. 115-109. It was a battle that went down to the wire. I'm just going to start with a big topic here as we talk about the game. What stood out to you when you watched this game?
Yeah, honestly, I was super happy with, in a weird way, with both teams losing and kind of showing a little bit of their ugly side in their previous game, because it just kind of made it almost a certainty that both teams would throw their A punch in this particular game. Honestly, my major takeaway in this game is that Denver is just more capable of generating easier shots than Boston is. I don't know about you as a Denver fan, but were you irritated at all with Stan Van Gundy's late game rant about Boston just missing shots?
What's nice is because I watch these at the DNVR bar, I rarely hear the commentary to that degree. So I missed it, thank God. And when I go back and watch it, I'm watching it on Synergy with no sound. So fortunately, I missed it. What did he say?
He just basically went on a rant at the end of the game that, like, if you're Boston, you got to feel great because you're this great shooting team and you weren't making shots on this particular game. And honestly, like, while I was watching it live, and obviously I use Synergy like you do, so a lot of times I have to wait till the next day or for several hours after the game to kind of look more into the data that comes out of the game. But I wanted to check it this morning because I remember as I was watching, I kind of felt like both teams struggled to knock down open shots, and it just was that kind of game, which is generally what these kinds of games turn into. And when I dug into it, Boston took a lot more jump shots. They took 45 jump shots in the game compared to Denver's 31. That's kind of just their identity. That's a difference in the way they play. Boston has had some wild high volume jump shooting games this season where that's like almost all they do. Jaylen Brown was the one guy bringing real physical aggression for them in this game. From there, everything outside of that was pretty passive and perimeter oriented. Both teams attempted 11 unguarded jump shots. Boston got 15 points out of their 11. Denver got 6. As a matter of fact, yeah, as you kind of, if you zoom out to both matchups on unguarded jump shots, Boston's been getting 1.55 points per shot in the two games, and Denver's been getting 0.84. Now, for the season, Boston's a little over 1.3 and Denver's a little over 1.2. So Boston's been shooting above their average in those situations, yeah, and Denver's been shooting below their average. And I'm a big believer, too, that when you get in these kinds of games, when the pressure goes up a level, when the physicality goes up a level, when it's not as like free and kind of stress-free as it can be during the rest of the 82, that those kinds of shots tend to be a little bit more high variance. Yeah. And you can, yeah, as a team, kind of lose your psychological confidence in those situations. And at the end of the game, it really came down to this. Boston just could not handle Jokic either on an island or in a double team, like baseline late help type of situation, because of the size and position that Jokic and Aaron Gordon brought to the table. And like really outside of that, like, even when Boston made their runs, and there were those two massive swings, right? Like we had the Jaylen Brown foul on Jokic that didn't get called. They go down the other end, they get the and one, they get the technical, it's a 6-point swing. And then Jamal, yeah, Murray had that sloppy possession where he turned it, yeah, over and he took a bad jump shot late. And Jrue Holiday, after being broke most of the night, right, makes two jump shots. That's two massive swings that kept it close. But even as that was happening, you're like, every time Denver gets down the floor, they're just going to Jokic either in the middle of the floor on the roll or on that right block against Porzingis, and they're just getting a great shot every single time. And I don't know how you deal with that over the course of a 7-game series.
Yeah, when I went back and watched this game, because watching it live, it's so close, it comes down to the wire, you're talking last possessions. When I went back and watched it, it felt less close than it did watching it live, in part because of what you're talking about. Those two, the three things really, the technical foul, which Jokic, by the way, that was a weird moment to get a technical foul. It was, I thought, a really egregious miss, and I would be pissed too because he got hit pretty hard and it's this or that. But it was also a moment in the game when you think like a technical foul is going to really hurt us here, and he gave it. Jrue Holiday hitting those two step back threes. Maybe he goes 1 of 2. Maybe he goes 0 for 2. Going 2 for 2 in those, a little anomalous, I think. And then to your point, Jamal Murray, who I thought was very good for most of the clutch, it almost was like he took his focus down a notch, you know, like he felt a little comfortable. So when you watch those three things happen, it almost artificially, I'm not trying to take anything away from Boston, but they were things that made the game close when it probably could have been a 7-8 point finish. And so I almost in that way felt like Denver had even more control than you remember it because of how that last group did. Did you feel that way as well, that Denver controlled most of this game and it was those little pockets that got Boston in it, but those aren't necessarily things you feel good about if you're Boston, like, oh, we'll always get Jrue Holiday step back threes. We'll always get a late tech.
Yeah, no, I felt the same way. Like I felt like when it came down to it in the half court, like one of the things, for example, I use this comp on my show last night. Like, can you imagine KCP co-opting two possessions at the end of a game for Denver? Like, yeah, no, like,
not at all.
They
not
might,
at all.
He might take a shot. Like it might be like, there was a KCP missed a left corner three. It was a wide open look. It was on a pick and roll, if I remember correctly. And Jokic drew two on the roll and he made the kick out to the left corner. Like, right, that's a shot that they'll get in the flow of their offense. But Denver is so deliberate about getting the best possible shot at the end of these games. Whereas for Boston, they almost play like it's a random regular season game in February in the middle of the second quarter while they're trying to execute down the stretch of a game. And so I just felt like when it came down to it, but like Denver was just so much better in the half court about getting the best possible shot. The one big thing for Boston that I think is a big silver lining is, like, you know, Aaron Gordon has the physical strength to hang with guys like Kawhi and LeBron. And he has the length to really bother guys like Kevin Durant. But that Jaylen Brown matchup, where it's more of like a speed, quickness, getting that lower center of gravity angle and kind of beating him to those, to just like those kind of leverage plays where he gets his shoulder a little lower and gets around him. That was the one big thing for Boston that I'm leaving this game feeling like, oh, like, they might have an issue there, because if they had to pull a quicker defender like a KCP, or have to go to a two forward lineup like a Peyton Watson, like maybe you run into some either issues with Peyton Watson on the floor offensively, or maybe some issues with guarding the guards if KCP has to drop down to Jaylen Brown. Like, I think that's where if there's one silver lining to cling to for Boston, it's that Jaylen Brown seems to have an athletic advantage in terms of speed over Aaron Gordon.
What's interesting about that, because I agree with you, by the way, that that's a very unique combination of strength and speed, because they're speedy guys, but they're not always as strong, and he can use his body. But if he gets a step on you, he's good at using his strength and getting around you, Jaylen Brown is. But what's interesting to me is, and this is a weird quirk, I think, of the Celtics, I'm not sure they can beat the great teams in the NBA when Jaylen Brown is the best player for them. And that's a really weird dynamic. It's the same with Denver. Like, Denver's going to win a series. Can you win a series without Jokic as your best player? Maybe if Murray goes like bubble Murray or this or that, but he's probably going to be your best player, this or that. You have a two-headed attack, but I don't know if it is. And part of it is what happened to Tatum last night. He had a very off night. And after the game, he talked about, you know, when another guy has it going, I'm good at stepping out of the way. You shouldn't step out of the way because another guy has it going. But the dynamic of the way those guys play, it almost lends itself to that. And I agree with you that Jaylen Brown had an advantage, but I also look at that and go, him pressing his advantage almost takes away from their other advantages.
Yeah, and Tatum in general in the two games has been pretty largely ineffectual. All season long, this has been an issue for him where, like, I think Tatum, as he's put on some muscle, has become one of the more physically imposing forwards in the league. And that type of game, like Jaylen Brown, how many possessions last night did you see where Aaron Gordon had him squared up and he like went through him? Or he saw a digging down defender into one of his driving lanes and he just went through the gap. Yeah. And we roast Jaylen a lot for turnovers or like traveling or throwing up bad misses around the rim. But to his credit, like, he will try to be a physical wrecking ball. And that's one of those things where, like, I'd like to see Tatum do that a little bit. Because, yeah, there will be some turnovers. There will be some missed layups. There will be some tripping and falling over people or running over someone for an offensive foul. But when you play with that kind of physical in position, there's way more good that comes from it than bad. And, like, I hated that post-game comment from him about stepping back. I'm like, that's the exact opposite.
Right,
you have to rise and meet Jaylen's aggression. And if you do, you have a much better chance of winning. And honestly, that's Boston's case, is, like, if you can somehow get Tatum to meet that physical aggression that Jaylen Brown brought in that game, they have some advantages there. But it's like that there is something to be said there about that kind of being Tatum's personality, where, like, he kind of has a tendency to float in and out of games based on, like, just whether or not his pull-up jump shot's falling. And yeah, like, I'd be a little discouraged on that front. I also thought, like, Porzingis, like, they did a good job getting late contests on him. Like, he made one over Jokic in the middle of the floor that was really well contested, but Jokic had a nice possession after that where he helped in the lane and got a great contest on Porzingis on the left wing. Like, even against the switches, like, Porzingis settling for that, like, kind of 10-foot face-up jump shot, he made some of them, but he also missed some of them. Like, you're not giving up, you know, any sort of dramatic amount of efficient scoring from that position. So, like, they desperately need Tatum to figure that piece out. And honestly, it's just, like, you mentioned, like, Boston struggling against the big teams. I feel the exact same way. Like, look at their last six losses. It's two against Denver, Lakers, Clippers, Bucks, obviously the collapse against Cleveland, which is a little bit of an outlier, but those other five losses are all against, I mean, the Lakers one was a little weird, but all those other ones are against teams that are considered in that top echelon of contenders. Every single one of those games, their jumpers weren't falling from the perimeter. Every single one of those games, they failed to find an alternative way to score and didn't get enough stops and ended up losing. And that's where that hesitance comes from.
The teams you mentioned, they have a trait in common as well, and I think Denver is a very good example of this. They're a great positional defensive team, obviously with Jokic, and they're good at forcing you. If you take the path of least resistance, Denver is forcing you into shots that they are going to live with. And when you talk about Jaylen Brown splitting defenders, getting to the rim, bullying his way, that's not taking the path of least resistance. That's saying, no, they're going to give me the little pull up. They're going to give me this little fall away. I'm not going to take it. I'm going to keep going and driving and driving and get to the cup. And obviously he got to the cup a lot. I think that's what it takes. It takes that mentality, but it's so different than what Boston does. Boston is a team that is sort of designed to generate, you know, quote unquote, good looks, efficient looks. They're, you get a kick out for three. We're going to spread you out and we're going to get those. And this is one reason I think to doubt him is that you're going to find a team that is locked in and has the energy defensively to say, no, you're going to have to go through us. And again, Jaylen Brown was up for that challenge last night. And I have to give a shout out. I thought Porzingis was as well in a weird way. When they played the first time, he would get Reggie Jackson switched onto him at the nail, at the elbows, and he would get a fall away, going away from the basket. And you think, man, you got a foot height difference. I thought last night Porzingis did a very good job of not allowing himself to get bullied, not panicking. And it wasn't that he went to the basket, but it's that he didn't fall away. He just turned, he faced, and he kind of went towards the basket, so you couldn't really contest it. So I thought he made the improvement there, but it was those two guys, and it really wasn't Tatum. Derek White didn't make a big impact on this game, and it wasn't Drew Holiday either. And I think that's the thing. If they're going to win a title this year, I think they're going to have to go through some defenses, not work the defenses to get the shots they love.
Yeah, you had a tweet last night. I think it was after Drew Holiday's pull-up three on the right wing. I think it was in the second quarter. And you're like, every 8 minutes or so, Boston will just take a terrible shot. And I almost tweeted you back. I was going to be like, it's a little generous to say it only happens every 8 minutes. I feel like it's more frequent than that. But that's a great point. Like I feel like this comes from the top down with Joe Mazzulla, and there's a lot of good that comes from this in terms of playing free. Cause like one of the things when you play with really good players, like a bunch of really good players, you can run into an issue sometimes where people are a little too passive because they feel like, oh, like we have all this talent, like I'm not supposed to take this shot. And so I can see a way to counter that by being like, hey, like, everyone be aggressive, play your game, don't overthink it. And like, I feel like they've gone too far in that direction, and they need to find more of a happy medium in the sense that like, maybe you play like that during certain stretches of the game, but like when the intensity is different, when you're in these certain types of matchups, they have to be more deliberate. And like, honestly, this is where a hierarchy actually is super helpful. And that's the thing, like the hierarchy with Denver is so simple. And it's like everything runs through the Jokic-Murray two-man game at the end of the game. Yep. Like just even in their bench groups, it's like I agreed with you. Like Murray, I actually talked about this on the show last night. Like Murray, I thought had his like nowhere near as good a game as he did in Boston. And I think he was like 7 for 18. I think he had five turnovers, if I remember correctly. But every single shot he made was timely. And I thought he outplayed Tatum. And I was like, okay, so if this is like a bad Jamal Murray game for this matchup and he outplays Jason Tatum, that's a huge win. And one of the things is like, you know, Jokic will go out and they'll start those units in the early second quarter and early fourth quarter. And it's like, you know, Zeke Nagy at center and they're doing a ton of switching and Jamal Murray's on the ball. And it's like, let Jamal cook time. Like, and Jamal might just dribble up the court and take, you know, four or five dribbles into a step back jump shot, go into his left or something like that. And it's like, that's just the hierarchy. They have such a simple, like clear hierarchy. During this stretch of the game, we run through Jamal. During this stretch of the game, we run through Jokic, you know, and it just simplifies it down. And I think it helps people stay in rhythm. Whereas like with Boston, it's like when they're in rhythm, everything's great. But they have a tendency to all go out of rhythm because they don't have that clear hierarchy and that clear, like, hey, during the start of the second quarter, we're running everything through Jaylen Brown or whatever it is that they do. It's almost too equal opportunity, if that makes sense.
So it's such an interesting point. I want to pull on it a lot here. Michael Malone and Joe Mazzulla are on different ends of a spectrum, in my opinion. And Mazzulla is an optimizer. Right, he's a new age coach. It's optimization, and we're looking at the numbers, we're looking at the play. This is how we maximize our value as a team. Michael Malone is a foxhole coach. He's almost less interested in optimizing the top end, and it's more when the shit hits the fan, what do we do and what do we look like? And we just have to build that, and we're going to lose some optimization around us all season long, but we're going to know exactly who and what we are in the important moments. And if you look at last night, they end the first quarter on an 8-2 run. They end the second quarter on a 5-0 run. They end the third quarter on a 6-2 run. And I don't think, now look, there was lucky. Murray hits a crazy shot. Jokic banks one. And there was a little luck there. But I just think there's also a lot of, this is an important moment of the game. And then when those important moments come, there's no question about what we're doing or what's happening. We get the shots we want. We do the structure we want. And so the headline of today's show was, you know, the difference between the Nuggets and a lot of other teams, and obviously Boston. That's part of it, is they are a foxhole team, and they leave points on the board throughout the regular season, but there is no question how to handle those moments, and it shows in every single game they play.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people calling out specific, like, big picture, large sample size, like, offensive statistics with Denver that aren't on par with where they were last year as some sort of, like, big indicator that they're not the same team. And I rejected that outright from the start when that narrative kind of started to take shape there at the midpoint of the season, because I'm like, do they look any different when you watch them in a big game? At all? Right. Like, do they look any different? No, if anything, they look a little bit better. They've been defending better this year, right? And like, to your point, I love that point you made about Boston and optimization, because there is something about their style that leads to outrageously good results in the large sample. For instance, like, I'll cover games with Boston where I'll look and I'll be like, holy crap, they took 65 jump shots and got 1.48 points per jump shot, you know? And it's like, that's outrageous. And it, like, over the course of the season, they have so many of those types of games. And the Eastern Conference is so bad at the bottom. It's like one of the most underplayed things every year when we talk about, like, awards, is just the way that inflates advanced metrics and a bunch of different things around the league. When you've got like 6 or 7 free wins at the bottom of the conference and you're playing 52 of your 82 games against your same conference, right? And like, I saw a stat last night, Boston's only 15-7 against the Western Conference. That makes perfect sense to me after, you know, after watching them in some of these bigger matchups. And like, again, like last night, they take 45 jump shots, 1.022 points per possession. That's kind of like what I expect in a high leverage game against a really, really good team in a physical environment. And so, so many times I'll have Boston fans in the comments or on Twitter or social media and stuff be like, oh, we're the best shooting team in the league. That's why we shoot a lot. And it's like, in the large sample size, you are.
Right.
There's no question when you're playing free and you guys are like beating teams by 20, 25 points and everyone's hitting everything. It looks great. But it's like, what is your alternative when that's not working? Like Jamal Murray wasn't having the same type of shot making game last night as he has in some other matchups this year. But they have a guy that can generate shots that are 70, 75% shots right around the rim pretty consistently. There is a lack of variance there. I'm sure a lot of Phoenix fans, I'm sure you saw a lot of this last night too. It's like, oh, well, like, we got him, we got Nurkic, we have it all figured out. And it's like, actually, methodically, from the middle of the third quarter, they kicked your ass. And then what happened was, is it got down to that 12-0 run at the end of the game to go up 112-109, and Kevin Durant, because he's Kevin Durant, hit a tough pull-up three on the left wing, and then he made a bunch of tough pull-up jump shots in OT. And KD can do that. But he also is capable of a game where he misses those shots. And then there is a different level of variance with tough perimeter shot making compared to what Jokic does around the rim that is so much more dependable and reliable. And that is what makes them such a devastating half-court offense.
And last year's playoffs against the Suns, to me, was the perfect example of this. It went 6 games, and the 2 that they won were games that you're kind of like, there was almost no way of beating them. They made so many shots that that's how it goes. But it didn't carry over game to game. Every next game, they had to bring the same level of shot making. And of course, they brought that shot making 2 out of 6 games. And as a result, it was a 6-game series. So I completely agree with what you're saying. Another thing that stood out to me last night, another interesting moment, Denver comes out of the half up 8 points. Immediately, Porzingis gets 2 threes and Michael Malone calls a timeout. And I saw a lot of people saying it was a rage timeout. I don't think it was. Again, Denver knows exactly who they are. They're a foxhole team. And that was Malone going, nope, we need an adjustment. It took 30 seconds to recognize we need an adjustment here. We got to mix some things up. And I know it seems like a small thing. He's not the only coach to call quick timeouts like that. But Denver is a team that I think, because they are so well-versed in who they are, they recognize mistakes quickly. They recognize patterns. They recognize adjustments. Even without timeouts, the players just seem to know, oh, the team's doing this. We need to go to this. And you can't take that for granted. A lot of teams are going to find out who they are in this playoffs. Denver knows clearly who they are, and they're just going to deal with the puzzles in front of them.
Yeah, it was interesting. I remember out of that in the fourth quarter interview, although you might not have heard it if you were at the restaurant or whatever, but like Mike Malone came out and he basically said, like, I had to take that timeout early in the second half because we had lost our game plan discipline, was what he had specifically said. And my best guess on that is I think they were over helping a little bit because they weren't conceding the Porzingis pick and pop three. They were trying to get a good late contest on it. And just like you saw at the end of the game, but that last one, the second one, Aaron Gordon, I think just was a little too upright, a little too far down in the lane. And when he went to go make that closeout, he was just a step too slow. What's crazy is he still got a contest on it, but it's not up to the standard that Mike Malone wants in that specific situation. organization. And I think Mike Malone's done a really good job this year of navigating like the urgency element, which I think is probably the most difficult element to repeating. Because like there's a, you know, even though Denver won in a way that looked relatively easy last year, they won relatively easy because they played awesome basketball night in and night out and were so locked into the details. And like there's a tendency to kind of let go of that rope a little bit when you don't have that same just overwhelming desire to get to the mountaintop. And I think Mike Malone has said there's been several timeouts this year where you just see him, he gets in the huddle and he's like, hey, if you guys don't do that, we're not going to win. Like, we're not going to win the title this year. Like, this is a non-negotiable habit that we have to have, you know? And like, he's been hammering that stuff home all year. And like that, very rarely do you see a team come out of a season like that and actually bring like an additional level of intensity the next year. And that's honestly how I felt. And honestly, like they've been coming out of this stretch right after the All-Star break better than they did last year, which was a stretch where they kind of relaxed last year.
Well, if you recall last year, I think they were great for about five games, and the separation after those five games was so large. It was nine games that they took their foot off the gas. There is a part of me that wonders if Denver takes their foot off the gas after this. I mean, they just had a great run against good teams, and Jokic keeps using the line. People keep asking him, is it the one seed? You need the one seed. And he keeps saying, we need to figure out our style of basketball and find that rhythm. I kind of think they have. And so there's a part of me that wonders if they go, okay, that's our rhythm. Let's not wear ourselves down going down the home stretch. But we'll find out. We'll see which way they go. A couple other notes here. Horford used to defend Jokic well. I think Horford, you know, 4 years ago was still a really great player. He's on the way down. Jokic 4 years ago was a really great player and on the way up. Those two have gone far enough apart now that I feel Horford is no different from any of the other guys. Obviously, last night, I think if you're a Celtics fan, you're probably demoralized by how easy Jokic made it look on Porzingis. And then, of course, they bring in the big fella to try to give him a third center, Tillman. None of those guys made an impact. And I think that's one big takeaway. If you're Boston, you look at that and go, all three of our bigs are pretty much cooked and we're compromised. There's no we can guard straight up for a stint here or there. There's no stint you can afford to do that.
And none of their bigs are even athletic enough to really if Porzingis is on the ball, for instance, their bigs aren't big enough to really contend with Aaron Gordon under the rim either.
Right.
This was something that I, even their forwards, and this was something that I actually pitched on my show last night. What's crazy is it actually sounds foolish to say, but like, I think they need to play more into variance. And what I mean by that is it can't all be Jokic and Aaron Gordon around the rim. You got to make KCP make a three. You got to make Michael Porter Jr. make a three. Then it sounds insane to say because that's what they do. And as someone who roots for the Lakers, I literally just watched them do it with making, you know, major corner 3-point jump shots off of help literally a week ago. But like, that's my thing is I think if I'm Boston, I'm either trying to pre-rotate and get inside position on Gordon so that you can bring that baseline help and then at least force Jokic to make a skip pass, or I'm doubling him on the face side to at least put us into rotation where we can close out and try to take advantage of some of our speed. Again, I'm a big believer in like, as a team, you talk about as a foxhole thing, like that's really, to simplify it, like Denver's really good at playing into their strengths. You know what I mean? Yeah. And like, that's the thing is like, defensively, Boston's strength really isn't size, it's speed. And so they're a team that should exist in rotation more, and at least for this particular matchup. And so again, it probably wouldn't work. And if they live with wide open KCP and Michael Porter Jr. weak side threes, they're probably going to lose too. But if I was going to lose, I'd want to lose with forcing Denver to make jump shots before I'd lose with them around the room. I do have a quick follow-up actually. So for the record, I'm only like 5% concerned about this. Okay. But Jokic last year, a jump shot was worth 1.17 points per shot, if I remember correctly. And then he was like insanely good in the postseason. It was like 1.21 points per jump shot. Before last night's game, he was hovering right at 1.00 for the season. Are you concerned at all with Jokic just not feeling as comfortable with his jump shot as he was last year?
I don't think so. I would guess it's more of a stylistic choice than it is anything else. I'd be curious the volume, just to see if the volume is different year over year. The one thing I'll say about Jokic's jump shooting that is so funny, he always shoots well from three in the postseason and never in the regular season. And I don't think that's a mistake. I think it's a very deliberate focus choice of like, in the regular season, a three, it's almost like he doesn't want to take them. Those are shots he has to take. In the playoffs, he's resigned to the fact that, hey, to win, this is one thing teams are going to do. They're going to try to play off me, so I have to come in with that game plan focus. So I know this sounds crazy, but I watched the guy every game of his entire career. Shooting is a lot about being shot ready, right? Shooters always tell you we're working on it. Half of it is just knowing as I get that ball, I got to go up right away. It's mental. I think for Jokic, it's mental as well. And in the regular season, he doesn't want to put his mind there. He wants to put his mind towards working and getting the ball where it's supposed to go and being aggressive. And in the postseason, and you'll probably see this in the last week or so of the regular season, he starts to take a lot of threes every year. He goes from 2-3 a game to 5-6 a game in the last six games. And you could tell, oh, he's getting ready. He's getting ready mentally for the, he has to take jumpers. So that would be my answer. Does it sound crazy to you?
No, I mean, I think it's important to acknowledge, like, he did shoot better last year in the regular season. And like specifically in like the Lakers matchup, those pick and pops, and like he was torching AD on closeouts, like just killing him with that like pump fake and kind of like lean through and go to his left hand side. So like I here's the thing. I don't think it matters because I agree with you. It's a process thing. Like if anything, it just is, he's just operating more close to the basket, which I think is, which I think is beneficial to them. Also, like as long as he has a reliable over the top shot, it doesn't matter. And he does, he has that floater in the mid range on the roll. And he has that hook over his left shoulder that he's just absolutely deadly with. So like, this isn't like a Giannis thing where like, he can't make a jump shot and he can't make a hook shot. Like, no, he got, he has everything that you need in terms of over the top shot making. I literally just wanted to call attention to it because it is a trend this year. But yeah, I tend to agree with you. Like I haven't seen it affect his ability to impact the game offensively at all, really. And instead of popping, he's just rolling. And that's really the difference.
It is an interesting note nonetheless. You also wonder sometimes, you know, if you could dice these numbers down in the starting configuration as he's shooting like last year and maybe against bench lineups, it's a little different. You got new players you're working in. I mean, it could be as simple as things like that, because as much as I believe the number, it's not something I've noticed. You surprised me with that number. So oftentimes when a number doesn't match your expectations, maybe it's just a little variance, but I don't know. It'll be something to keep an eye on. Is there anything else from this game? And really, I want to go to the Celtics side of this. Celtics go 0-2 against Denver. I mean, that's a likely finals matchup. Is there anything else that you look at here and say, this is why it'll be different in a postseason?
Oh, man. I suppose like, I do think that Boston has more they can tap into defensively, like I talked about. Like, I really didn't like their defensive game plan down the stretch, as I mentioned earlier, and I won't go into that again. But, like, I would try to exist more in rotation with the speed that they have. I thought Jaylen Brown brought an additional level of ball pressure to Jamal Murray at the end of the game that he didn't really start the game with. And if I remember correctly, Drew Holiday started on him at the opening tip. So I think that's another thing they can do. And as we remember last year, the one win that Miami had in the finals was just an awesome Jimmy Butler point of attack game where he was just swarming Jamal Murray the entire game. So like, those are some little things that I would look to. Again, that physical imposition of Jason Tatum, just not being passive just because you don't have the best matchup, but being more aggressive in that situation. But yeah, those are the big ones for me. Again, like Boston, I think Boston will have games in that matchup, probably in Boston. If they were to play in the finals, they'll have games in that matchup in Boston where they just hit 25 threes and they win by, you know, 15, 20 points. Like that will probably happen once or twice.
If they fall down 0-1, if they fall down 0-1 in game one, do they have that game in game two?
I think it's on the table. I think that's something that you always hear. There is, we talked about the rhythm thing. Like, It is a thing where when you have too many guys who operate with the basketball in their hands, they can all go out of rhythm at the same time. But there's also a version of that where they all get in rhythm at the same time. And then you're just completely hopeless in those situations. And again, Boston has had nights like that. And so, and against good teams from time to time too. So like, I thought last night was interesting in the sense that I thought it clearly demonstrated that Denver is the best bet to win that series and that they deserve to be favored and that they probably win. But I did think it demonstrated enough to show that Boston is capable of winning. For example, I don't think Oklahoma City is capable of beating Denver in a series. No. I don't think the Lakers are capable of beating Denver in a series. I actually think Boston's capable. I think there is a path to victory there, albeit a somewhat slim one. And I think they demonstrated some of their advantages in that way last night.
No question about it. All right, we'll take a break. On the other side, we're going to race through a couple other games. I do have to give you one note, though, because I watched your show last night, and I'm sure people in the comment told you this. absolutely a pass at the end of the game. In fact, at DNVR, we're calling it the finale oop because of how common it is for Denver to close games. It's the last play, and it's always a lob to AG, usually a blind lob. So no question about it, it was a pass. Let's take a break. On the other side, we're going to get to Minnesota finish. We're going to talk Miami-Dallas. But first, we are presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New customers who deposit $5 or more can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,000 back in bonus bets instantly. Tonight, you can lay that money on the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are a -1 hosting the Minnesota Timberwolves. Man, that's basically a dead even matchup. Nobody knows how the Timberwolves are going to do right now. So you go up against a good Cleveland team and they're building. That's a real mystery bet there. You might want to take Miami, who is a 9-point underdog in OKC, or perhaps you could take Jason's Lakers, who are 2.5 points underdogs against Milwaukee Bucks. Those three bets are up. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code ALLNBA. New customers get that no sweat bet up to $1,000 if your first bet loses. Only DraftKings Sportsbook with code ALLNBA. The crown is yours. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. That's 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available. For problem gambling, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 or older, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. One no-sweat bet per new customer issued at one bonus bet. Based on amount of initial losing bet, bonus bet expires 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/promos for deposit, wagering, and eligibility restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. Also want to tell you about the Game Time app. If you're looking to go to a game or an event or maybe even a concert this weekend, you're going to check out the Game Time app. They have that really great, easy-to-use interface. I hopped on it today to look at tickets for Saturday's game against Utah. $68, the lowest ticket. I remember 3 years ago, Nuggets tickets against Utah, like a bad lottery team, you get that for $10. Now $68, the cheapest bet, but you're not going to find any deal better than the Game Time app, so check them out. They have those zone deals, flash deals, last-minute ticket buys, and of course, they have the all-in pricing right there on the front page, so you don't wonder what the price is going to be at checkout with all the extra fees. You'll know exactly what you're paying before you pick your seat. So download the app, create an account, and use code ALLNBA for $20 off your purchase, your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, use that code ALLNBA for $20 off. Last-minute tickets, lowest prices, guaranteed. All right, back here on the All-NBA show, Jason Timp filling in for Tim Legler. Check out his show, Hoops Tonight. You can find it on YouTube, part of the Volume Network. Very great show. Dallas was bleeding the last three games. Could not get a win despite Luka Doncic going Super Saiyan. He goes Super Saiyan last night, but they pull out the win against the Miami Heat. What stood out about this one?
They finally got their defense going. They were on just an all-time bad defensive stretch. In their previous six games, they had been giving up 127.3 points per 100 possessions. That was 5 points worse per 100 possessions than any team in the league during that span. Main thing that was standing out to me on help, way just not paying nearly enough attention off the ball, some really bad help and recover decisions. They're giving up 23 wide open threes per game. That's a defender at least 6 feet away during that span. That was the third worst in the league over that span. So just not a good defensive effort. They gave up a 144 defensive rating in that first half, or first quarter, excuse me, against Miami. Luka was getting torched in that matchup. Just really soft help, like not making those athletic dig and recover plays where you get into the lane and then you sprint back. He was just kind of passive, jotting around, and Nikola Jovic was beating him on rolls. He beat him on a backdoor cut. There was a transition defense possession where he was running back and just kind of standing flat footed in the lane, and Jimmy threw a pass over the top to Bam when he wasn't paying attention and he got a layup. Just I think in general, Luka has had a better off ball defense season through the first chunk of the year, but this last stretch has not been pretty for him. And then they finally locked in and they got a bunch of key stops. And then down the stretch, I thought Derek Lively had a couple of huge defensive plays against Bam Adebayo in the lane. And there's another conversation to have about Bam's inability to finish around the rim on anything that's not a dunk, which just continues to be an issue. But like, I also really liked the lineup they went to down the stretch with just a lot of size with Dante Exum and Maxi Kleba and Derek Lively. I thought that was a big impact on Jimmy Butler, that he was just constantly going against bigger forwards that he kind of couldn't bully the way that he usually does. But I thought it was just a good kind of get right game for Dallas. Sometimes you have to be humiliated to lock in. And I think after those six games and then that first quarter, they finally all looked around at each other like, come on guys, like let's go. And because they do have decent defensive personnel. They're not great defensive personnel, but they got some athletes. They have some guys that can guard on the perimeter. They've got some guys underneath the rim that can defend in different ways. Like I think they should be better than they have been defensively.
So the defense part is interesting. We were critical on the show, including Tim Legler, critical of Luka's defense this year. And you get all the people, and I relate to this because I remember being on that side of an argument for Jokic years back. He's a better defender. That's an old narrative. You're going to an old narrative. He's an improved defender. He's an improved defender at his best. The problem with Luka, and I think what Tim was getting at when this conversation first started up maybe 2 months ago, was he is so prone to fully taking his foot off the gas defensively. Just fully. It's not so. Yes, his best has improved, and when he's dialed in, and I think when guys are not hyper athletic, quick twitch type players, which he is athletic in different ways, but he's not a fast, cover a lot of ground type of guy. When you're not that type of guy, it takes a lot of energy in the regular season to be a great defensive player. And if you don't bring that energy, your ceiling falls really, really quickly. I think that's what you're getting at, and I think that's what Tim was getting at when he criticized Luka, is he doesn't always play with that intensity for whatever reason. And when you talk about the slump that they're in, a team takes on the personality of its best player. Again, I'm saying this from experience. I saw this with Jokic all the time in his ascension. And a team takes on the personality of that. And when they lose it, they're just not good enough. As great as they are offensively, they're not good enough to beat teams without that effort. I think that makes a regular season problem for Dallas. But it does also, on the flip side, give me hope that in the playoffs, I don't think Luka's taken possessions off in the playoffs.
At least not as frequently. Yeah, like that's such a great way to put it. Like it's like when he's engaged, he's a useful defensive player because he has a decent amount of size. One of the things I think that's tough with that specific position is like a perimeter player who is somewhat slow-footed and disengaged on defense. There's a certain element with Jokic in the coverages that he's in most of the time where like he can defend with his brain a lot, where he's like kind of reading plays before they happen and really active with his hands. And more often than not, it's just that classic up and down of a drop coverage where you're coming up to the level and then getting back and up to the level and getting back. Whereas like you just have to be so much more attentive with perimeter players. And so Luka just kind of plays a position that it's difficult for him to relax. There was a late closeout attack from Duncan Robinson. It was like middle fourth quarter, if I remember correctly, where he was kind of ball watching around the left elbow, and he was almost like completely back turned. And there was a swing. He was guarding Duncan Robinson. There was a swing pass to Duncan Robinson on the left wing, and like he was caught flat footed, wasn't paying attention, took like this kind of half hearted lunge step out to Duncan, and Duncan just went right around him all the way to the rim and laid it in. And it's like you don't have to do much there, other than like just pay a little bit of attention and flatten out that driving lane a little bit so that you have a chance to rotate, and then you've done your job. Like they have guys that they're asking to do the harder job in that system. And I 100% agree. It's just a matter of when it's ugly for Luka, it is so ugly. And I am a huge believer in that setting the tone thing. I think here's the thing. The Lakers have been a mediocre team for a few years. And there's definitely some personnel and front office stuff that plays a role there. Just a lack of prioritization when it comes to the dirty work, kind of high motor athletes that you need on the perimeter. But I don't think it's coincidence that the 1 year they dominated the regular season was the year LeBron tried the entire year, which was in 2020 when he came out in training camp and just went like that. You know, there's a lot of Laker fans that are like, hey, we have this young roster. Like, why are we not playing hard behind LeBron? And don't get me wrong, like you probably should try to target some guys that have natural motor to be alongside LeBron. But there's no doubt that like there are 60 games a year where he just doesn't engage as the low man, and as a result, their defense falls apart and it just kind of trickles down the roster. And so I do believe that's a real thing, and I'm sure that plays a role with Dallas's defense.
That's such a fascinating point about the Lakers, and it definitely applies to Dallas, but it's such a fascinating point. You're right that leaders, even if the job is somewhat almost below them, right? Like you need your leader, you need your best player to be rested and have his energy for offense, but there's still something about just setting the tone. For whatever reason, everybody else needs to see it to get the best out of them. And I love the way you put it, that some guys just have natural motor. Bruce Brown's one of these guys. He doesn't need a leader to show him how to have a motor. He just plays with a motor because it's who he is. Pat Beverly is a type of guy like that. So I love that point. I think it's fascinating. The last point I have on this game, though, with Dallas, I'm so fascinated by who their closing lineup is and should be. And when we talked about this a while back, I remember Legs had thrown out, you know, we both talked about closing lineups and we both had different ones. Last night, they go with Exum, who's been back for a couple games now, instead of Green. I think that's probably the right move. It's such a luxury to be able to go to Exum as a ball screen on Luka. Usually guard to guard, you're going to switch. Luka's too big, though, so you can't switch that one. You're going to end up, almost every team's going to try to trap Luka. And when you can roll it to a guy like Exum, who one, has good size on him, but is an incredible decision maker, it makes it tough. And he had one of my favorite plays. It was probably the play of the game, I think with about a minute 30, rolls to the rim, extremely well covered by Miami, extremely well covered to both rotate and guard 3-on-4. But he gets to about 5 feet and hits a fallaway because he goes through all options, checks through every pass, it's not open, and he hits the fallaway. And I just thought, having that, a playmaking point guard rolling to the rim 4-on-3 is just such a deadly counter. So to me, he's clearly part of their closing lineup. What do you think?
And that can hold up defensively as an athlete with real length.
Correct.
I love that you pointed out that play because he also had a pick and pop where they blitzed Luka and he kind of rolled to the left wing and he knocked down a three. And like, there's a certain amount of like variance there. Like he shot really well overseas last year, which I think kind of led into some stuff this year. Although he's had some stretches
playing for the greatest coach in the world, Jelko Obradovic. I don't know if you know this, I'm telling you, man, this guy. And I'm just giving this story. Jelko Obradovic coaches Partizan. The director of scouting for the Denver Nuggets, his name is Drew Nicholas. He played for him. And I asked him one time, what do you think of Obradovic? And he said, he's the greatest coach that's ever lived. And I said, okay, like non-NBA, he goes, of any level. And I said, well, what is it that it makes him so great? Is it X's and O's? He goes, yes. I was like, and in-game adjustments and leadership and connecting with players and strategy, everything about him is just perfect. And I thought, man, that's an emphatic guy for a guy who works in the NBA. So I only say that anecdotally. I can't tell you that much about him, but I am never surprised when guys go and play for him and then come to the NBA new players.
That's super interesting. I had not heard that, and that is very high praise. And I do think that Dante's trip overseas was productive for him and just kind of like redefining himself as a basketball player. But again, the pick and pop three, there's a certain level of like he makes it or he misses it. That roll, that right shoulder fade he made off of the roll, I thought was such an awesome example of like the type of high level role player shot making that you need sometimes against elite defenses, because the elite defenses are probably going to find a way to take away the easy pick and pop three or the easy, you know, roll to the rim where you have a kind of a clear lane to go to the rim for a layup. And honestly, this is one of the underrated things about the Nuggets is like KCP and Michael Porter Jr. are both capable of being chased off the 3-point line, having a helper rotate to the front of the rim, but be able to make some sort of dribble combination jump shot in the mid range. And that's a huge thing. Like that was an extremely well-defended possession by Miami, that the only shot that was available was a tough mid-range, you know, kind of like shot-making type of possession for Dante Exum, and he had a move in his bag that he could go to. And I agree. I just thought in general, going with that size and then again using Exum as a screener there late was super productive for them.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The other game that happened last night, a handful of games, but the other one we're going to talk about, Minnesota Timberwolves go their first game without Karl Anthony Towns, and it was a very interesting one. Kyle Anderson starts in place of Karl Anthony Towns, no surprise there, although that lineup, that five-man lineup going into last night, only 62 minutes together. So it just shows you what uncharted territory Minnesota is going to be in these next month, playing heavy minutes with lineups that are really just getting familiar with each other. I thought, obviously, Anthony Edwards' 44 points is phenomenal. We're going to get to him. I actually thought the play of the night was Conley's three, a minute 30 left. Anthony Edwards carried it home, but that shot stopped it. It was like Tatum's shot at the end. You miss that one, and you might blow the lead, and all of a sudden you're playing from behind. Everything's a little tighter. You hit that one. I think it put him up 4 or 5, so there was a cushion to be had. It was a huge shot, and as encouraged as I am about what I saw from Anthony Edwards, I still look at it and go, that team's going to need one of those almost every game in a close game because you can't count on just one guy to go off like Anthony Edwards did.
it was a tough shot too. It was like a hard jab step towards the baseline and kind of like a side, like a slide step to his right as he went up and knocked it down. And yeah. Conley has a tendency sometimes to be a little passive at the end of games too. So like you need him to take and make those more difficult shots. I thought this game was actually kind of concerning on several levels for Minnesota. First of all, I thought Kyle Anderson was an absolute disaster on both ends at the end of the game. He when he switched on to Tyrese Halliburton, he couldn't stay in front of him. He had these really bad hedge and recover possessions. There was one that the one where Siakam had the dunk over. I think he dunked on I can't remember who it was he dunked on rolling to the basket, but where he just like lunged and reached in aggressively and got himself way out of position and opened up an easy roll pass for Pascal Siakam. He fouled Aaron Nesmith in the left corner on a 3-point shot at just a really bad, reckless closeout. And then on the other end of the floor, there were a couple possessions in there where they were able to throw multiple bodies at Anthony Edwards, and it just wasn't an issue because Kyle Anderson's not much of a threat to score. There was another possession where Anthony Edwards got ahead of steam in transition, and Kyle Anderson just kind of meandered to the dunker spot on the left side while Rudy Gobert was in the dunker spot on the right side, right. And there was just a thicket of bodies in the lane. And so they're going to have to figure out what they're going to go to there. I mean, that's the question is, do you go small or do you go with a guy like Naz Reid? And that's going to be tough. But like at the end of the day, if you really look in on that game, the Wolves have been a terrible crunch time offense all year long. And one of the specific things that I've noticed is like when they can take and make pull up jump shots at the end of games, they can win. All four of their final field goals in that game or pull-up jump shots. It was the Conley jab step three out of the left corner. Anthony Edwards hit a pull-up three in pick and roll coming off a ball screen. And then he had two kind of like ISO step back jump shots in the mid-range that he made. And like that's the thing is like when with the way that they're set up and configured offensively, because Jaden McDaniels is not necessarily a knockdown guy from the perimeter, because Rudy Gobert is a guy that can struggle with catching and finishing around the rim at times and guys can kind of rotate and recover with him, and because Mike Conley can be a little passive from time to time, it really does, the buck stops with Ant in so many different ways. And he's a little young. He's got a little bit of the Tatum-itis where it's like, I'm one of the best athletes on the floor, but more than half of my shots are like difficult jump shots. Like that's one of those things that he's going to have to figure out in the long run. So like, it was weird because like Ant's greatness overcame, and we haven't even talked about one of the best defensive plays I've ever seen at the end of that game. Every 10 minutes I'll see a new camera angle that's even more ridiculous than the last one on that block. But I do think it was a little concerning because they don't know, they're gonna have to figure out what they're gonna do with that four spot, and I don't think Kyle Anderson's gonna work there. And then two, like their offense late in games, even when Kat was out there, has come down to this like tough over the top shot making, and I just don't think Ant's good enough at it for it to put them over the top.
He's good at it in any given one game. Is he good at it in a series to do it? I don't think so. So if you get to a point where it's like, hey, this is the decisive game, he's scary because he does have it in him. But to your point, the ability to do it enough time, even we were just talking about KD and Booker, two of the best at this, even they, it's difficult to keep pace with the great teams just purely on shot making. The pass, I want to get to the block was great. I think everybody's talked about the block. Everybody knows how great it is. It's weird that I'm going around the top story here. The pass that Halliburton made to create that fast break to me impressed me. I know it didn't end up winning the game. How many best players on a team in that moment will get the ball and allow somebody else to make it was the right play. It's basically one-on-one. It ended up Ant coming back. But to get the ball out and say, this is our best option, downhill, I'm giving it to somebody else to make the read. I was just impressed with his decision-making there. Then, of course, Ant erased it.
So I think this is just kind of programmed into his basketball DNA. Totally. He's kind of like a combination. Like the last guard that used to do this a lot was like Lonzo Ball, where it's like he's just programmed as a point guard where it's like, this guy's open up the floor, I'm throwing it. And I'm a huge believer in kick ahead passes just foundationally as a basketball concept, because I think it gets the defense to turn their head the other direction, which 100%. Opens up lanes for trailers. It's a big opportunity to open things up for trailers. And like, honestly, this is another thing that I think goes way under discussed when we talk about like the heliocentric kind of like offensive engines, because so often the Halliburtons, the LeBrons, and the Jokic's get looped in with the Trays, the Hardens, and the Lukas. And this is something I vehemently disagree with, because one of the things that Halliburton and LeBron and Jokic have always done is they get rid of the ball quickly. They make quick decisions, and like it is an offense where they kind of determine the equal number of possessions as that Trey, Harden, Luka group, but they do it in a way that keeps everybody in rhythm through ball and player movement. And yeah. That's one of the things with Hallie. Like, Hallie is every bit the type of, like, you can't put an extra defender on him because he's going to kill you with the pass every time. And if you leave him in these specific traditional coverages, he'll torch you with pull-up shooting and floaters, and he can beat bigs off the dribble to the rim. But he's doing it in like these lightning quick interchanges where it's not stagnant the way it can feel sometimes with Trey and with Luka and Harden. Yep. And I always want to push back on that because I do think it's two very different types of players.
It totally is. I love that you compared him. By the way, I've compared him to Lonzo Ball. He's like the evolutionary A version of Lonzo Ball, who, by the way, I love Lonzo Ball. He was one of my favorite players. So I love that because I haven't heard that comp before, but to me, their bodies are similar. Their style, their minds are similar. Halliburton just, you know, a little bit better of a scorer and everything else. I'm curious to see what happens with this Minnesota team. Ant had 44 points last night. They eked out a win. It was a great performance. I just think there's going to be a little bit of a learning curve. There's going to be ups and downs, and I think they're going to have some ugly games ahead, including they play tonight against Cleveland. That's going to be a tough one. So I'm curious to see if they fall at all, and if so, how far, because you can just lose one or two games you're not supposed to and fall three spots in the Western Conference. I think that's going to happen to them.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Let's get out of here, though, Tim, with two sponsored segments. The first one, as we do every Friday on this show, we ask who won the week, presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. This is where I give you four nominees for who won the week. This started last Friday and ended last night. Here are your four nominees, and I'll let you pick. Chicago went 3-1 this week with road wins over Sacramento, Utah, and Golden State. All three of those are impressive wins. Their only loss was at home against Milwaukee. Understandable loss. And they had a different leading score in every single game. I thought that was a very interesting one. Sacramento went 3-1. They had road wins against the Lakers, Minnesota, and a home win against the Spurs, who are sneaky difficult to beat right now. And then Luka Doncic. This one's tough. This is such a Luka nomination. 37-11-11, 52-40-88 splits, and they went 1-3. Like, he was transcendent, and they went 1-3. But I had to nominate him because those numbers are absurd. And then I always throw a wild card at you. Trey Murphy, a 34-point game and a 28-point game. And he shot 61.5% from three on insane volume. I think he was taking like 12 or 13 a game, and he shoots that 61.5%. So between those four, the Bulls, the Kings, Luka, and Trey Murphy, who do you think won the week?
I'm gonna give Chicago some flowers. So this is a team that like is one of those teams that got off to such a bad start that everyone's just decided they're bad, but they've actually been pretty good for a solid like 3 months now. And like, they're one of the teams that I think really does a good job of identifying what their strength is, which is that perimeter speed, especially at the guard position. And they just compete at the point of attack defensively all game long. As a matter of fact, we did a video breakdown on Golden State's defense after the Bucks game that we released this morning. And I texted our producers last night before the game. I was like, I'm really worried about this game for Golden State, specifically because teams that can bring multiple perimeter defenders to throw at Steph, like good perimeter defenders to throw at Steph, and that can throw those aggressive coverages and kind of wear him down. That's what kind of exposes Golden State's lack of other shot creation that they have off of Steph. And that's been a consistent theme that we've seen this season. It kind of was an underrated element of the Kings series last year too, is like they can kind of wear Steph down just by throwing quick guards on him all series long. Right. But like, I like Chicago between Caruso and Adesunmo, obviously the revelation of Kobe White this season, they're kind of a little bit of a bruising interior team. Andre Drummond is kind of having a little bit of a throwback season there. I think Chicago is like one of those like teams where like you're gonna beat them in a first round series, but they're just gonna be a royal pain in the you know what. So like I'm gonna go with Chicago as the winner of the week.
I like it. We'll give them some flowers. Also, by the way, the play-in becomes interesting because now they'll probably host against Atlanta. They have a two-and-a-half-game cushion over them, so you expect them to hold on to that. But they're not going to catch, I don't think, Philadelphia or Indiana, which means if they win their first round, they're going to have a road game against one of those two teams. Don't see them doing it. But who knows? Who knows, man? They're a fun team. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, our weekend slate. I'm going to give you the slate. You tell me which games are most interesting to you. On Friday, we have Minnesota at Cleveland. That's on ESPN. That should be an interesting one. Orlando at New York. I kind of like this one. The Magic are streaking. You have Miami at Oklahoma City, Milwaukee at the Lakers. And then I put Charlotte at Washington. Marquee game tonight. Why? Because they're on a 16 game losing streak. And if you look at their schedule, they only have like one or two games left where they're going to be favored. This is one of them. So if they lose tonight, they might end up breaking the record that Detroit set earlier this season. What stands out to you about these games?
Oh, man. That Orlando-New York game is going to be tough just because Orlando's such a physically imposing team. And I feel so bad for Knicks fans. They get this like unbelievably dominant stretch right after the OG Anunoby trade, and then everybody gets hurt. and their entire front court is down. And like, honest to God, like I really just want to see what it looks like when OG and Julius Randle and Mitchell Robinson are all out there together. Also, that Bucks-Lakers game is such an interesting game because neither team is good at defending on the perimeter. Both teams have good interior presences. Both teams desperately need that win. Obviously, Milwaukee coming off the Golden State loss, and then the Lakers are just floundering in mediocrity. So, like that, those are the two ones that stand out to me.
And you always get something. LeBron versus Giannis, those guys, they bring it for these games. So that should be a fun one. On Saturday, Chicago at the Clippers. I mean, the Bulls are streaking, as we just mentioned. The Clippers reeling a little bit. Boston at Phoenix. Boston also reeling right now, two straight. Are they going to make it three straight? And then San Antonio at Golden State. I only like that one because it's always fun when you get a Wemby at, you get Wemby at Steph's house. So that should be fun. Any of these ones really stand out?
Boston Phoenix easily. It's funny. I want it. Like, this one is a game I've been looking forward to all week. And I kind of was like, part of me was like, I should just stay up and work it, but I desperately need to take a couple of days off. So I'm not going to work this weekend. But like, that specific matchup, obviously, with KD and Beal riding high, KD shot well again last night, by the way. So he's starting to kind of get going off of the strength of that run against Denver late. But both of those teams really need that one. It's kind of an interesting matchup in terms of just perimeter shot creation, and I that's the one I'm going to be keeping an eye on for Saturday.
Finally, the Sunday slate. These are the games Legs and I are going to be talking about on Monday. You've got Milwaukee at the Clippers. So Milwaukee has the LA the two-stop LA tour. You have Indiana at Orlando, which I think will be fascinating. Houston at Sacramento. These are the Jokic the Jokic copies here. Those two guys going head-to-head, and then Minnesota at the Lakers. What about the slate?
Sacramento Houston is going to be an interesting one. I actually think Houston is one of those teams that is better than their record as well. I think they're really well coached. Yeah, I think they compete really hard on the defensive end. And Alperen Şengün is one of those guys that's kind of flying under the radar this season. And Sacramento is just playing red hot basketball. Sacramento, it's so funny. I saw that butt kicking of the Lakers last night coming from a mile away because like it's so the Lakers are like sneaky good against the shifty shot maker types, except for Jamal Murray apparently. But they're sneaky good against like that's why they've beat the Clippers. That's why they've beat the Suns. That's why they beat the Thunder. Like these teams that like take off the dribble jump shots a lot, but speed guards just absolutely flambé them. And De'Aaron Fox and Malik Monk just did them absolutely dirty last night. That I think that's a big one. And then Minnesota Lakers, obviously just a really important game for both teams.
Yeah. Minnesota every game right now, we're going to be locked into them. All right, cue that outro music, Emma. Let me see, we had one super chat. It came in from Leighton Blunk, but it didn't have any message to it, just $4.99 Leighton Blunk. So shout out to you, we appreciate it. We'll consider it a tip, and I apologize if you had a question that you weren't able to get to. Anything you want to, Jason, this was fun, man. This was as fun as I expected it to be. Anything you want to promote or plug or say to before we get out of here?
I actually have one last thing I want to hit. You mean to tell me that you don't think Jokic had a conversation with Gordon where he literally was like, hey, man, if your guy steps up to help, just grab my hook shot and dunk it. And I'll call it a pass. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that they've had that conversation.
I'm telling you, listen to me. Listen, Jason. Jokic puts the ball exactly where he wants it to go, whether it's a pass, whether it's a shot. The guy has this insane ability to just to put the ball exactly on the mark. And I just know he reads the team. It's always in the clutch. You run an option, it's Murray. You run the next option, it's Jokic. You run it again, and it's Gordon. It's a sequence. They have it down. They could do it blindfolded.
I think some of them are passes. The one against the Lakers was definitely a pass. But that one last night was so close to the rim, I was like, they have to have had this conversation.
I mean, I'm telling you, it's going to happen again, and I'm gonna hop on Twitter and write you a note. I'm just going to say, what about this one? What about this one? At some point, it mattered. This was great stuff. Hoops Tonight with Jason Timm. Check it out. Subscribe to his YouTube channel. Awesome work he's doing there. Legs is back on Monday, everybody. Have a great weekend. We'll see you then.